Session number 26357.
Harold Wright, reel 2.
Hi.
So yep. How many were you in each hut?
I can't really remember. It's just an ordinary long hutch, you see, and a door at each end. And there must have been about 12 or 12 each side, and a kind of a stove in the middle, which, you know, we got the fuel from somewhere, coal, and that, we got that, and which was another interesting thing, because I got, being Mollis, looking green and being feeling, we ascend him, they gave me a bucket in the platoon, so we had a bucket by the stove, and go and get it filled up with coal, you see, and I took this bucket and went off and saw this lovely, lovely pile of coal, and I filled my bucket with coal, and didn't realise that the coal was marked, so that I had to empty it out again and wait for the issue. We had an issue of coal, so I had to wait for the issue.
What was the food like?
The food was nice. I liked the it was more or less, you know, wartime food, and it was quite nice. I didn't complain about the food at all. And because when we went out on exercises, we had what we called compo rations, which was tablets. More or less, like tea was a tablet, and sugar was a tablet. And I always remember the meat was a tablet, and also the two bowls of sweets, I suppose, for vitamins, that was in there as well. And that was what we called our 24-hour ration packs.
When you were training, did you have to learn how to survive undercover, bearing in mind you'd be dropping behind lines?
Yes, we survival, yes. We more or less, on one occasion, I was let out to get some food because we were a bit short of our own food, and we just might have scrambled for carrots and potatoes and that from the gardens, and just made a kind of a stew or something like that to supplement what we were already having. So we did manage. I don't remember complaining about being too hungry. I was hungry, but not in the circumstances. I just felt that it was our duty, and so we just carried on, you know, and found our carrots and found our potatoes and boiled them up and had extra bits of food like that. And we had, I always remember, we had I had a tin of Oxo cubes, so I used to put an Oxo cube in the big mug that we had, and put that on and made a nice stew.
And did you have special training for like anti-gas precautions? Or?
Yes. Well, we just had the. We didn't have the special respirators at all. We did have respirators, but not the gas so much. Respirators, but specialised. I think it must have been a general army issue to the regiments. And we carried that in our little pack there, and if I can remember it fairly well, it had a tube on it, and for to freshen the air, I think it was, some chemical or something that would clear out any inferior smells or something, or effects that it would have on us.
Did you do any special training to be like driving or to be a Batman? Or
No, I was chosen as a Batman practically out of the blue, really, because being more or less enlisted and in the camp there, the officers had to have a Batman, you see, and for some reason or other, I don't know why or how, I got chosen to be a Batman, which was looking after Lieutenant Nuttall. He had his business near Okehampton. He had furnishings and all that, curtains and that. I can always remember that, and his family. And he was Okehampton, you see, was what I can remember very, very well, because I visited his son there. But what would be the place beginning with D, P, Plymouth?
Oh, yes.
Plymouth. That's it. His father had he was the mayor of Plymouth. And so he had, I think he had two sons. Pardon me. He had two sons. And he was at Plymouth. That's right. Now I got it right. I couldn't think of it before.
So what sort of training did you do to be a Batman?
Well, we had to polish his shoes and press his clothes and have it all ready. I suppose like the Batman to the Prince of Wales, something like that. We had to have everything prepared for them. And
when you were doing those duties, did it mean that you didn't have to do some other duties? Were you excused some duties because you were being Batman?
Not really. I don't remember escaping.
Excuse me.
I don't remember escaping many duties, because where the officers went, we went, except for when they had their private parties and all that, we didn't go there. But on this one occasion, when I was Batman to another officer, he was a captain, he used to stutter a bit, and I always remember he had his whiskey bottle tucked away into his van, jeep, and I used to smile because he used to mark it with the level, and on one occasion I thought, well, it looks nice, so I had a sip of it, and then I filled it with water up to the mark. He didn't know anything about that.
What did you think of your officers and NCOs?
I liked them very, very much. They were truly, they're very, very strict. We had Oscar Farmer, who was our regimental sergeant major. And incidentally, Oscar lived at Newton Abbott. His wife, I think she's still alive. I think... No, he was at Newton Abbott, yeah. And I think that must have been the daughter, I think, at Newton Abbott. And so he was RSM, Regimental Sergeant Major. Very, very strict man. He had to be strict, anyhow. And on one occasion, my boots were not cleaned properly. And the officer, got me on a charge for 3 days, where I had to do duties and went down to the kitchen and peel potatoes and all that. And on this occasion, the first day,
the first night, morning, when the I was already dressed before reveille and just jumped over everything when the reveille sounded, to go down to the guard room to report. And it was all chalk. And I always remember that I jumped over a very, very holy part of the guard room and got caught by Sergeant Major. But I got away with that one.
So how long did your training actually take?
About a year. I worked it out, about a year. In that time, we did all our glider training and everything else in tests. But the main thing is, at the end, after the war, after I came out of the army, I realised that all these stages that we went through were actually related to war, to what we were to expect when we got to, you know, with the enemy.
And how many were there of you in the airborne unit that were training?
I should think over a thousand. Well, I mean, where's that photograph there? It's a there. That long photograph there.
Yeah, several hundred, aren't there? So, did you have a good esprit de corps?
Oh yes, yeah, yeah. Yes, it's a marvellous organisation and very, very strict. It had to be strict, and you realise it more or less when you finished. You know that the discipline set you up in life, set me up in life anyhow. The discipline.
Did you feel that you were above the ordinary infantryman units, an elite regiment?
I think with our red beret, you see, because we had to earn it, we weren't issued out with a... We had the ordinary forage caps when we joined. And then, because when we had a red beret, we had to earn it, and we felt that... that we, you know, it was a kind of
a recognition of your
recognition,
work?
Yeah, recognition that of the war, yeah. Mm.
So, what happens after the end of the year? Did you go off somewhere or as a regiment, a trained regiment, after your training?
Well, after the training, well, we were still at barracks.
At Bulford?
Yeah, Bulford, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were still there. And because after the year, along came D-Day. In June, you see, June the 6th.
So you finished your training sort of in end of 43, or?
Well, the war was 44, 1944.
D-Day.
D-Day. So I came out. I finished my training 44, 40, early 46. Mm. And that's where I finished, you see.
Yes, but so you'd been training as an airborne, and you finished your training just a bit prior to D-Day, in June the 6th, 44?
On D-Day, I was in France.
So how did you get there?
Well, our regiment got there on D-Day.
Right. So, how were you? What were you told about what was going to happen to you prior to D-Day?
Well, we were more or less. There we are. That's the D-Day.
The beaches.
Beaches, you see, and we were at Sword Beach there. You see, on the right-hand side.
Yes.
And that's where we landed. A company came by glider, and we came by else light landing craft.
So which company were you in?
B Company. Major Barra. He was our company commander.
So where did you disembark from? Portsmouth? Or?
No, we're in the, what they called the, what they call it now, because it started off... we assembled up near near Portsmouth, what they call the Battle of the, not the Battle of Borden, no, we kind of, all the different regiments and that were taking part on D-Day, we seemed to form up there. Yes. In a big circle.
Were you in a transit camp for a few days before you went away?
Yes. Yeah, we were shut up, more or less. Didn't see anybody and wasn't allowed out at all, you see, because of the secrecy.
What did they tell you was going to happen, or they didn't? Or did they not say anything?
They didn't tell us, no, they didn't tell us what was going to happen or where we were going to go. We were just shut up, and then when the time came when we had to assemble, I forget what they call it now, they call it Piccadilly Circus. That's it, they called it Piccadilly Circus. And there was thousands of boats and ships and that, all assembled more or less off the Isle of Wight, all ready for D-Day.
So you embarked on a ship.
Yeah.
How long were you on the ship before?
We were on there several days because of the weather. The weather was very, very poor, bad. So we had to stay on. I'm not sure how many days, whether it's two. I've got an idea. It could be two when the weather changed and D-Day set out.
Are you a good sailor?
Hmm?
Were you a good sailor?
Oh, no. On this occasion on our LCI, like landing craft, as we call them, they were called, it was my turn to empty the slop bucket. I had to go up this very, very steep ladder and carry the bucket up there. And when I got to the top, I put the bucket on the top. And then the boat lurched and down it came, came down amongst all the chaps down below, which I wasn't very popular, all the toilet slops, you know. But it was so rough, it really was, and I seemed to be, I don't remember being ill or anything like that. I reckon that I must have been pretty good on the water. Sea water didn't affect me at all, I don't think.
How many were you? You're on the LCR.
Oof. Do you know what? That's one thing I can't puzzle out, because there's three of us LCIs with a gun in the front came at Sword Beach together. And we were anchored off for quite a distance because of the mines.
Just on the morning of the 6th?
Yeah. And we had to kind of walk along to get off the ships. You see, they had the side, they dropped a rope, had a rope more or less stretched across. Somebody was holding it on the beach, and we had to kind of catch hold of the rope and carry something off the RCI. Mine was a packet of Piat bombs, which was encased in waterproofing, so that was all right. Some poor fellow had bicycles and that, and he dropped it, and he had to more or less go underwater and survive to get it.
Were you under fire as you landed?
Yes, Germans were on the beach firing in all directions, you know. It's really a frightening experience, and if I remember rightly, I think I one time that I trembled, you know, really trembled.
Were you some of the first troops ashore?
Yes, yeah. Well, there's an advance party that had been there before D-Day. They were already there. We didn't see them, but they were already there. Submarine and a type of boats that they were hidden, and they were there, but we didn't see them. But seeing the news, seeing the pictures now on television, they were hidden out of sight for some reason or other. They were special troops that had to do that.
So as you hit the beaches, what happened? Did you have to fight your way ashore?
When we hit the beaches, we were soaking wet, naturally, coming through the sea over your heads, and we came ashore, and we had an assembly area where we had to assemble, all of us in the regiment to assemble.
And then did you strike inland, or...?
We gradually move slow, and I always remember Fontaine Henry in France. It was the first place it was only a short distance from the beach, but that was where we had our shower, hot shower, in one of the fields under canvas. And then we spent one night there, I think, where I met my friends that I'm in touch with now, even after all those years. And every August I go over there for 10 days.
This is French people.
Yeah. Mm. And they're sort of a huge family. And when they have their get-togethers, so usually about 30 or even more attend at the same time on the same day, and barbecue, which was a feature which I should never forget, because I had to go and collect with my friend John Paul Clement. He's the people I stay with, John Clement, and Benedict. They've been my friends right from the start, like that.
How did you get to meet them?
A very curious way, because after we came through the salt water, we had to dry and change clothes, and we went to this had shower, just Fontaine Henry, and I was wandering to. Go to a film show, which was in like a little part of the house, one story house. It was the film part where the French used to go and see the films. And I'm going along there, and this boy came up to me, a small boy. He said, would you like to meet my father and mother? And I said, yes. So it was only a few yards. I met them, and they were the more or less the start of all this friendship which has gone on to this present day. And they took me to meet their parents, and he's still alive, the son. He was only a little nipper, and I see him when I go over in August over to France, Fontaine Henry. I get invited over there and see him. It's quite a... I don't know, I think it was meant to be, you know, because they're more or less not having a father. I felt more or less... I've got to stand on my own feet and get on my own, get my own, do my own thing myself. Nobody's going to help me. And I think my boarding school prepared me for what was to come, which was the army. And I'd fitted in like a glove in the army through the training I had at boarding school. I didn't find it difficult, like some of the poor fellas did. They used to cry and break down and that because of missing their home life. I just felt that I hadn't really got a home life. So I just fitted in like a glove.
So when that first fortnight, after you'd landed, what sort of action did you see as you came ashore?
Well, that was a holding position we were in the first fortnight. as a holding position, because the other regiments were coming in after that to take up positions.
So you're protecting the beach?
More or less, yes. Well, making a bridgehead, really, so that the boats could unload and come in, and the chaps' regiments, different regiments, would take up their positions. So I think that was the reason why we were stuck where we were.
Did you have many casualties?
Quite a few, yes, quite a few. When I go over to France, my friends part of the family where I stay, they come in the chain. We had one position there. We had a mortar come down and kill three of our chaps on the mortars, just any yards away from there. and we had our casualties. Yes, we had shells and land amongst us.
And did you take many German prisoners?
Quite a few. Yes. Yeah.
What did you think of the Germans?
Somehow or other, although I treated them as enemy, I also treated them they're professionals doing a job which they had to do for their country, and I had some respect in a way for them, because they were only doing the job for their country as we would do for ours, and as soldiers, and it has a different kind of aspect, I know, of treatment. I mean, I didn't grind my teeth at the sight of a German. I just thought to myself, well, they got a family. They got a wife, they got mothers, they got fathers, and children, and that was always on my mind, that somebody somewhere they loved.
It was somebody's son.
Somebody's son, yes.
Did you act as Batman while you were there?
But in France, I'm just trying to think now. Yes, I was Batman. Yes, I was Batman in France. Of course, I was. Yes, Lieutenant Nuttall's Batman. I was.
He was your platoon leader, or?
Platoon. Yeah. We called him Betty. Don't ask me why. I think because he looked a bit la-di-da. But I think we called him Betty Nuttall. That was his christening name. And of course, you always get christened with a name that you don't quite understand. I got christened as Jasper. And even to this day, I get called Jasper. Yes.
So after you'd had your sort of rest and break at Fontaine Henry, what happened to you all then?
Fontaine Henry, we more or less were holding the line. And then we went to Sword, the other part of Sword Beach. We more or less kept, as I call it, local, really.
You said A Company had gone in on the gliders. Where had they landed?
A Company, they landed not so far from the... from Sword Beach, not so far.
Were they at Pegasus Bridge?
No. But we had to, when talking about Pegasus Bridge, we were near there. That's where we were more or less set up position there, by Pegasus Bridge. And many of the chaps, there's a cemetery there, and there's quite a few that lads in there in Pegasus Bridge, And Joe, the one that got shot talking to me, sitting on my trench, he's there, and I see him, see his grave every year, and pay my respects with my friends, French friends.
How did you feel when that happened to him?
Well, now I get asked that quite a bit, really. How did I feel? I find very difficult to actually put into words. The war was moving so quick, and people were getting shot here, there, and everywhere. And I never dream about it for a start. Never dream about the war. The effect it had on me seemed in, at the time there, in the beginning of the war. You just had to carry on. You just it didn't strike you really until after the war. And then you suddenly realise of the poor fellows who gave their lives. Then you think of Joe, and that's the kind of thing. It didn't really. I don't know. The effect when Joe was hit. I can't explain really how I felt. I just felt that the war had to go on. The war was going on. And I don't know, I can't explain it.
So, as a unit, what sort of transport did you have? Did you have jeeps or...
Oh, we had the...